Roll down tide.
From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal.
I'd like to hear a little bit more conviction in your take, though. There was a lot of maybes, a lot of what ifs, a lot of questions. You need to just get on here. You need to fire and put me in a position where I have to tell you that you're wrong.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
Nice. Nice.
Welcome to another edition of the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal. I'm your host, Neil McCready. Today on the show, we're headed to New Orleans. Larry Holder of The Athletic, he covers the Saints, the Pelicans, hosts a radio show there in New Orleans. We'll talk about the Saints here as the Super Bowl 53 approaches. We'll talk about the Pelicans, the Anthony Davis story, absolutely owning the news in and around the NBA. We'll talk about those things and more with Larry in a minute. But first, let me tell you about the Oxford Crystal. Highway 6 West in Oxford, right next door to the Oxford Exxon, where if you are looking for an idea for Super Bowl, head over to the Oxford Exxon, get those ribs. They're fantastic. They'll get them ready for you just in time for kickoff on Sunday, and then head over to the Oxford Crystal, get the 10 crystals for $6. Pick any five for $5.55 there at the Oxford Crystal, no matter what you are looking for. You want some variety, you can mix it up. You can get five for $5.55 at the Oxford Crystal. You can still stop in for breakfast, get the three-egg plate combo, fresh cracked eggs, Gold Peak coffee, all of that. And you can still get those square meals, the $2 square meal, $3 square meal, $4 square meal. It's all at the Oxford Crystal, Highway 6 West in Oxford, right next door to the Oxford Exxon. I'm coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios, Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900. Call that number, ask for Corey Clark, tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for, and he'll get a quote to you within 15 minutes in business hours. It's right to the bottom line. There's no hassle, no haggling. It's just an easy car buying experience. You get your quote, and the rest is up to you. You can shop it around, or you can go right back to Corey, close up your deal, tell him that you heard about Clark Ford on the podcast, mention any of our family of podcasts, and you'll save $500 off. The bottom line at Clark Ford and Amory, 662-257-1900. This podcast is also brought to you by LB's Meat Market. LB's is at 2008 University Avenue in Oxford, 662-259-2999. Call Greg Jones. Tell Greg what you're looking for, what you want. He'll have it ready for you. Whether it's the bone-in ribeye, whether it's the filet, whether it's his pre-seasoned half chickens, the sausages, they've got a little bit of everything. Jeffrey Wright was telling me about the ribeye sausage lasagna, which actually sounds absolutely incredible. So go in, check it out. We've got a beer fridge when you walk in. Grab a six-pack of your own. Make a six-pack of your own. That six-pack, normally $9 to $10. It's just $6 if you'll tell Greg that you heard about LB's on the Beer Garden. The Beer Garden is also brought to you by Strategic Partners in Media. SPM is a full-service advertising agency. It works with all businesses of all types, big or small, Fortune 500 companies to startups. SPM can help your advertising needs for TV, radio, print, and every facet of social and digital media. Here's why SPM's really good and different than other ad firms. They handle everything in-house. They don't sub their work out. The writing, the production, and the editing is done solely by their staff, crafted uniquely for their clients. Lastly, an Ole Miss grad and a Mississippian's a partner in the firm, so give them a call and see just how great they are. It's Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. And last but not least, we're brought to you by Community Mortgage. Community Mortgage, located in Oxford, Memphis, DeSoto County, and Chattanooga. It's 30 years old this year. It's one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast. All of the underwriting and the processing is done in Memphis, so you know you're getting local underwriting that understands your market. It's also the leader in condo financing in the Oxford market. So ask Jason about Community Mortgage's float-down option, which allows you to lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you can get the lower rate. It's JLO, J-L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com. Now let's head down to New Orleans. Larry Holder of The Athletic joins to talk about the Saints, the Pelicans, and more here on The Beer Garden, presented by Oxford Crystal. Larry, really appreciate the time here this evening. As we were talking about before we got started, I don't even know where to start because there's two major stories in New Orleans. I wouldn't have ever thought that anything could possibly be a bigger story in New Orleans the week after the NFC Championship game. And Anthony Davis probably isn't, but it's amazing to me. And I'm curious with you. We'll start here. I'm curious if you're the same way. The NBA is, and I'm an NBA guy. I love the NBA. But there's something crazy about it. It has the ability, like tonight, as we tape this on a Thursday night before the Super Bowl, the NBA, via a trade that might happen and a trade that did happen, Kristaps Porzingis traded from New York to Dallas, and, of course, the Anthony Davis trade that everyone is waiting on and perhaps might happen by Thursday, might not. We'll see. That's a bigger story in terms of headlines tonight than the Super Bowl and than Bryce Harper, the preeminent baseball free agent, maybe of the last 5 or 6 years, meeting with the San Diego Padres. That story doesn't even resonate. Harper, it doesn't even get any national attention. The Super Bowl's just kind of the Super Bowl, and yet the NBA is what steals the headlines.
Well, I think if maybe Anthony Davis just feels like, you know what, he's got some New Orleans blood in him, and he wants to take away from the Super Bowl and just keep New Orleans in the headlines, because if the Anthony Davis trade talks would not have happened, it still would have been all about the no call in the Saints game. But it's pretty remarkable that that this could happen, and I think in part it goes to show you that this Super Bowl matchup isn't great and it's not sexy and people aren't into it.
It's boring.
Otherwise, this would be a story for sure and a big story. But it's also that's part of it. But you know, when you have a talent that's as good as Anthony Davis, I mean, it sends shockwaves, and it's funny because it's a bigger story nationally. Now, it's a big story here, but it's still not, to me, number one banana here in New Orleans right now, which also shows you kind of the dynamic of how this town works. And regardless of even if like LeBron James played here, it's a football town, but look, yeah, and it's also, I think as well, that nationally this is a huge deal because you want every team in the NBA would want Anthony Davis. And for New Orleans, we expected this. Like, we anticipated this. And so the fact that just came out when it did, you're like, okay, the news finally came out that everyone thought, because even the most skeptical of NBA fan in New Orleans saw when the night Anthony Davis got drafted that, oh my gosh, if they don't do this thing right, it's going to be Chris Paul all over again. So this is the second time we're seeing it. And this is a bigger superstar than Chris Paul. And, you know, he's trying to go in, team up with LeBron James. And it's like all the big markets are the ones being talked about. So I feel like that's part of why this is such a huge story and really just put the Super Bowl back kind of in the wayside. And those are two of the hugest markets in the country, and people just aren't into it. Whether it's Anthony Davis, whether they think the NFL is a bad product as far as what happened in the NFC title game. But yeah, it's amazing that one guy could kind of change the news cycle for the week. The biggest week of sports typically is the Super Bowl, and it's not at this time of year.
Yeah, it's remarkable that it's not. Right, we'll get back to Anthony Davis before we finish up. I want to get to what is the banana number one story in New Orleans, and that's still the no call at the end of the NFC Championship game in regulation. I know there was more to the Saints' loss than that call, but take me through. You're a pretty rational guy. You've covered the Saints when they were good. You've covered the Saints when they underachieved. You've covered a playoff. You've covered a Super Bowl. You've covered a playoff disaster. You've covered all of it. Take me through those moments when that call didn't, when that play happened and there wasn't a call. What went through your mind? What did you think? And then We'll go there, and then we'll pick up from there. I'm just kind of curious your reaction to it when it happened live.
Well, I thought the call was blatant and obvious, and then when it didn't happen, I'm just thinking, well, all right, the Saints are in good enough position that they kick a field goal, they go up. I still felt like even in the moment that right after that happened, they went up. I said, all right, the Saints. They've been able to come up with big plays all year, that the defense would be able to slow down the Rams, create something crazy. I didn't trust that Jared Goff could drop down to get it done, even though he was playing better. And so I just still assumed the Saints would win. And as Greg Zuerlein gets into a field goal and they go to overtime and the Saints get the ball in overtime, I'm still thinking, all right, the Saints are still going to win this. And then when Drew throws the pick and you're just thinking, oh my gosh, this is, as my brain's churning and I'm watching this and I'm thinking about how am I going to describe this? It really didn't set in for me that this call totally blew it until the game actually ended. Cause I just still assumed the Saints would win. And Neil, you, like you said, you've known me for many, 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 many years, and you and me share a very same, similar mindset as far as covering sports and covering the teams and this, that, and the other. And I can honestly admit for the first time in my professional life, like I walked into a locker room and I looked at the guys and I felt angry, like we got cheated. Not like we, but I'm just talking like sports fans. Like, this is a we got cheated thing. And that's the first, I'm telling you, it's the first time I've ever thought that. And I felt genuine anger about what happened. And I feel like I wrote my column afterwards with anger,
Yeah.
I'm born and raised in the New Orleans area. Like, I live, I've lived in now New Orleans for 12, 13 years now. So, I'm as New Orleanian as just about as you can get. And, I'm shaking off this, that, and the other. It's never affected me, but this one really got me. And it's the fact that we're 9 days later, Roger Goodell has a press conference. He basically says what he could have easily said right after the game. And no one, I think no one here, but I think that people, and look, it wasn't just my buddy Jeff Duncan, who you've known for many years. He was the one New Orleans reporter who got a question in the press conference for Goodell, but other national reporters were asking about it, and it just seemed like everything he said was hollow. Now, I don't think anything he was going to say was going to soothe New Orleanian Saints fan Sean Payton, Drew Brees, anyone from the Saints, but a lot of it just felt hollow. And, once you hear that, you're like, okay, it is what it is, and life's not fair sometimes. But, in that moment, though, it didn't really get to me until they actually lost. And I was like, that's why they lost, because none of this other stuff would have happened. If they got the call, they could have taken a knee, drove the clock down, and it would have taken another Minneapolis miracle for the Rams to beat the Saints at that point.
You know, it's funny, when that happened, there were so many people that said, oh my God, it happened to the Saints again. And I thought, no, it's completely different. And the next day, the players all come back and they have to clean out their lockers because, it's the business of the NFL. And the punter, Thomas Morstad, was asked about it. And I can't remember who asked him. It was probably a scrum of some sort. And he said, The Minnesota game a year ago was difficult. It was hard to accept, but it was a football play. And football plays happen. And if you play the game long enough, crazy things happen in the course of a football game or in the course of any kind of game. And you hate it and it's painful, but you get over it because it's football. He said, this was different. We felt like we were robbed. Someone took something away from us. It didn't just happen where, a ball gets tipped in the air or a guy falls down or a guy misjudges a ball or whatnot. A pitcher hangs a curveball. Stuff happens in sports. But when it's a robbery like that, it's a completely different thing. I don't want to go too far with it, but there's almost a feeling of violation a little bit. I mean, I, I'm I grew up in Louisiana. I didn't grow up a Saints fan because they were so bad, and I didn't do it. And so when the Saints got good, I just never allowed myself to jump on that bandwagon because I thought it was wrong. But I felt like for Saints fans, I felt like they had been criminalized. If a crime had occurred against them, I was. I know what you mean about angry. I was kind of angry for Saints fans.
Yeah, it's almost feel like you got like WWE jobbed or something like that.
Yeah.
And of course, that's the conspiracy theorists all come out to play when these things happen. But yeah, it, I could tell you, I talked to, you know, even right after the game, then the next day when we did talk in the locker room, and Thomas Morstead wasn't the only one saying that. I mean, the players said, look, we can deal with just a bad play in the field, a missed tackle, and that was it. And that
stuff
was,
happens, yeah, right.
That's the sentiment that they know that they could have prevented that. This, they couldn't prevent it. I mean, they can't make the call. And
why do you?
Everyone knows. Yeah.
Why do you think the call was? Do you think it was? I'm not asking you to give me a conspiracy theory because I'm not sure that I believe there's a conspiracy, but. In your opinion, why was the call missed? Was it just the referees choked in that moment?
I think that, yeah, I think that they choked. And also, even after the game, the comments coming from the Rams locker room was saying that they felt like the officials weren't making as many calls as they maybe thought, basically letting them play. And so they felt like that they could play dirtier as the game went along because they felt like the refs were not going to make the call. And I just think that this is just a total gag job that an official in that big of a spot did not want to become the story by making a call. Instead, he makes the story by missing the obvious call and immediately. And it goes back to, this immediately popped up and probably for you too, the blown, what was it, perfect game, and Jim Joyce, he missed a call, and he felt terrible, and, you know, cried and hugged with Armando Galarraga, and the next day, because he knew he blew it, and it was, it was a huge individual milestone, and, you know, it stinks, but it wasn't this big. And so I just think he choked on the whistle, and that was it. I mean, he was staring right at it, and I don't know... I'll never know how he missed it. It's when you're standing right there watching it. I'll never know. Never know.
Is there a way to fix it? You cover the NFL for a living. You're around it all of the time. The officials, for the most part, do a pretty good job. I think the NFL has the best replay system around with the challenges and that kind of thing. Is it time to expand replay?
I don't know why people like John Elway and some others say, like in Mobile, when people were asked about it during Senior Bowl week, they almost just said, we can't do that. Like and they're on the competition committee. It almost sounded like it would be too difficult for them to like fathom. And I find that very troubling because this is obvious, blatant, in the NFC Championship game. And I don't understand. And look, Bill Belichick has actually suggested that never even gets really to a discussion. But in owners' meetings every year, there's always a proposal from the Patriots about expanding replay and being able to challenge just about everything. And they feel like it sounds like just from – say Elway and maybe like Stephen Jones and the Cowboys that they fear would slow down the game. I don't understand why you can't use a challenge within the landscape of two challenges. Why can't that be used as one of your challenges? That does not make sense to me. It doesn't slow down the game. And it's something where if they challenge it and then the call goes, you know, stays a stand, you lose a challenge. It's the same thing. I mean, are they afraid that they're going to have too many challenges? Like, you know, coaches challenge two plays a game, plenty enough time, not something too crazy. And it's not like the NFL doesn't lack in viewership. People aren't really complaining about game length, time, way shorter than college, so I just don't – I think people within the league are afraid it's going to go too far, and I just don't see why something like that or a penalty or something can't be you can't challenge it. I don't understand that. So I'm really curious to see what happens in March if this thing just kind of moves forward and – I don't know, because this is something though that the NFL is never going to escape. They're never going to escape this call, just like the tuck rule. And even the tuck rule, it was the rule. It was interpreted properly. It's just a crappy rule. And so they changed that. But this is just a rule that everyone on the planet knows, and it wasn't called. So they're never going to escape this. And I'm one of the many of thousands of folks down here that are wondering what can ever be rectified if they don't do anything. It's certainly going to cause a stir.
Kind of moving forward with the Saints before we get off the subject. Drew Brees was really, really good for the first 3 months of the season. He was still good for the final month, but he wasn't as good, and he wasn't great in the playoffs at all. Was that age? Was that an injury? And how big of a concern is that for the Saints moving into the next season?
I think that's a good question. What happened? I could say that certainly the Saints, you hear about Alvin Kamara and Michael Thomas, but they lacked legitimate receiving weapons outside of those two. And when one of your receiving weapons has to be running back because you're so devoid of reliable talent, that's a problem. And, you know, I think it finally caught up with the Saints. And that I think that's part of it. Do I think Drew may have hit a little bit of a wall? I think so. I think that's part of it. And also, I feel like, and this is going along with some of the skill position players, of all people, Taysom Hill admitted after a game within that stretch where Drew wasn't as playing as well, but he just said overall that maybe at some point teams thought the Saints were a little too predictable. And I don't think I've ever heard that. And
no.
I think that goes because for so long, you know, when they've had the stretch of very good teams, they would have four viable wide receivers. You'd have like Marcus Colston, Lance Moore, Devery Henderson, Robert Meacham. And that has dwindled and dwindled and dwindled as we've gotten to this season. And now that you look back at it, it's almost so amazing that Michael Thomas was so good because everyone on the planet knew they were going to him. And I feel like that they've got to address that this offseason. I don't think Drew trusted the other guys that were around him, and I don't really blame him. There's a reason why they went out and signed Dez Bryant. And then when Dez tore his Achilles 2 days in, they brought in Brandon Marshall for a few weeks. He never played, but they brought him in just in case. So they knew they needed somebody. And I think that's something they've got to address, both at wide receiver and I feel like at tight end. They need some sort of option because that position was really a no factor at all this year.
Whether the Rams deserve to be in the Super Bowl or not, it's a totally different conversation. They are obviously a very good team. The Bears went 12-4. The Eagles, stands to reason, will still be around. Dallas is still a good team. How much – the window was obviously pretty open for New Orleans this year. It's, I would guess, not quite as open next year, but how open is the window still for the Saints team to get another title?
Yeah, I think their roster is in really good shape, and I think people are free agents or whatnot, they're going to want to come to New Orleans because I feel like Drew's under one more year of his contract. Could they extend him a little bit? Yeah, but I feel like that 2019 truly is the Super Bowl or bust year. And I think that's that we've not seen a quarterback play as well as Tom Brady at 41 and Drew's now 40. I mean, we saw Brett Favre have a great year, and then the following year after in 2010, it was a total drop-off, and it was over. So I think that has to go into kind of when you're expecting the Saints to be a contender next year. But I think that they're going to be still one of the best teams in the NFC, and they should be given a legitimate shot at getting to the Super Bowl. So it's the biggest free agency question would be maybe Mark Ingram. Do they want to bring him back? I don't see a, I think both sides would like to make something happen. So I don't think that's a big of a deal. I mean, Teddy Bridgewater is going to be a hot free agent name for the Saints just because he could want to leave and go try to start somewhere as opposed to try to sit behind Drew. But, you know, I feel like that this rod, and they're going to have to make some tweaks. I mentioned some of the skill position players. But I feel like overall that this team is still set up for one more run, like one more really good run. And then after that, I don't know. Like, I would not, I need to see what happens in 2019 to say anything about 2020. So I do feel like that they are in good to very good shape. In look, they'd be going for a division title third in a row. Never happened with the Saints. So I think that they are in a position to be able to do that.
Before we close with Anthony Davis, give me your Super Bowl pick.
I'm going to pick the Rams. I am. I think that defensively they started getting a little bit better. I'm going to go to the Rams. And I think Todd Gurley's going to get his act together. So if he gets his act together, then it could be a little dangerous. And so controlled environment, dome, no elements. I know Jared Goff struggled in Chicago. But I'm going to go to the Rams. And I will tell you, though, here in New Orleans, and I'm going to actually write about everything that's going on in New Orleans on Sunday. Because I'm probably not going to watch the game because I'm going to be out and about. There are parties, festivals, bars aren't showing the game on purpose. Like it has become New Orleans is throwing its own damn party and they don't care who wins the game.
I don't blame them at all. All right. The NBA trade deadline's Thursday. When you get up on Friday morning, is Anthony Davis still a Pelican? At least in name?
Yeah, I would think so. I'm surprised that the team actually announced that he made the All-Star team today. So, because they took him out of their video montages already. But I think that I think he's going to be a Pelican once the trade deadline comes. I mean, I've seen the Lakers' most significant offer that's being reported out there. And, yeah, I think that even if the Pelicans wanted to go with that offer, I think they should do themselves a favor and wait to see if Boston gets involved in this thing, which I'm sure they want to. So the Knicks could have been someone that maybe they wanted to roll the dice and go get Anthony Davis, but they've already just made the trade with Porzingis, so that obviously eliminates them. So I still think it's just going to be a two-horse race, the Lakers and the Celtics. And I'm pretty sure the Pelicans would much rather see him in the Eastern Conference than have him in the Western Conference. And I feel like that the Celtics could present them a better lot of players than overall what the Lakers are offering. So it's I would be surprised if he got moved before the trade deadline. I really would.
I know Rich Paul says he wants to go to L.A. There in New Orleans, do you get the sense that Anthony Davis is as gung-ho on going to the Lakers as Rich Paul is on Anthony Davis going to the Lakers?
I would say yes. There's actually a kind of a sentiment within the organization that they saw it last year, and they can see why Davis would want to go to the Lakers. They feel like that Anthony needs to be a beta, not an alpha. And Anthony succeeded when Boogie Cousins was here as being not having to be the alpha, quote unquote. Now, he still played like an alpha when Boogie went out, but they know that LeBron would be the alpha. Of course, there's the agency connection. When you saw that, you knew that, you know, things were going on, and that's why there's talk of collusion and this and that, because it seems pretty obvious that there is collusion.
Of course.
but I think that's where he wants to go, and he feels like he can be a winner there. And now, I'll just put it this way. I don't blame Anthony Davis for wanting to leave for 1 second. The Pelicans have forced his hand. I mean, he's in his seventh year. They've won one playoff series. He's only gotten in the playoffs one other time. They deserve the blame, and that's the sentiment in town. There's no question about it. Not many people that are angry with Anthony Davis. They're angry with the Pelicans and want to see if they don't screw this thing up, like what happened with the Chris Paul. Again, different ownership, different scenario, but that Chris Paul is always going to be lingering in their head. If they can't get a blockbuster deal out of this, not that many people go to the games as it is right now. No one will be going to the games if they totally botch this.
So, you just led into my last question. That was where I was going to end it. Obviously, it to this point hasn't worked with Davis. It's not the nicest arena in the NBA, that's putting it nicely. It is a Saints town. It's not a major market. Is there any sense there, any concern there that, hey, if this goes sideways and they break up this team and they don't get the kind of pieces back for Davis that you could build around, that keeping this team in New Orleans is going to become problematic?
I don't think, as long as Gail Benson is alive, that they will sell the team. I don't see that at all. And that goes back to, she's from New Orleans. She is, you can even hear in her accent, she's kind of, sometimes she can have a little yaddy come out. So, and she wants nothing more than just to continue Tom Benson's legacy. I mean, that's who she is. I've gotten to know her in the last, say, month or so. Having spent a couple of days with her and some close associates up in their horse farm, I was able to do that and wrote all about it at The Athletic. And I really feel like I got to know her. And she is someone who is New Orleanian through and through. She does not want to do that. I know that. Now, after that, I don't know. Like, so it's, it's always going to be a question, because even like there's no sustainable success here. And, you know, people already spend enough money going to Saints games and going to LSU games. And, you know, the population isn't huge here, like in other markets. And so, I mean, do people want to put their money into it if the product's not right? I mean, it's a viable question, but I will say, as long as Gail Benson is the owner, she is not going to sell. I don't think there's any chance of that.
Fascinating stuff. Listen, man, I really appreciate the time. I know you're busy. Thanks so much for spending some time with me. Congratulations on the new deal at The Athletic. I've read some of your work. It's just fantastic as always, and I hope to visit with you again soon.
You got it, Neil. Thanks, my man.
All right, Larry, be good. That was Larry Holder. Again, our thanks to him for his time today on The Beer Garden, presented by Oxford Crystal. We'll come back next week. As we referenced a little bit, it's been a crazy last few days in the NBA. The NBA trade deadline is Thursday. We'll do an NBA-focused show next week. I know some of you hate that. Some of you love that. The NBA, a hot topic, as the All-Star teams have been announced. Kristaps Porzingis traded from New York to Dallas. That opens up two max slots in New York. I don't know if you've heard, but Kevin Durant will be a free agent at the end of the season. A lot of talk about him going to New York, maybe Kyrie Irving going to New York, possibly Boogie Cousins going to New York. The Lakers still very much involved in trying to get Anthony Davis. Boston's going to try to get Anthony Davis if he's not traded before Thursday. In Memphis, Mark Gasol, Mike Conley, both on the trade market. Zion Williamson, the Duke star, is the almost certain number one pick in the draft. There's a battle to get the most ping pong balls. There's a lot to talk about in the NBA. We'll work on an NBA guest or two for an NBA-focused Beer Garden next week. For now, that does it for this particular edition of the Beer Garden. Our thanks again to Larry Holder of The Athletic there in New Orleans. We look forward to talking to you again next weekend. Enjoy the Super Bowl, and be safe, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks for listening to The Beer Garden, presented by Oxford Crystal. Take care.